Hello, everybody, and welcome to the final episode of the first season of Reaccess Hollywood, which means we're doing the final two episodes of BoJack Horseman's first season. Sam, how happy are you to finally be here? We're at the end of the first season, and we're going full steam ahead into a great show now.
I am extremely pleased. I mean, on watching these last two episodes, it's been worth it because I think you can already... especially in the finale, there's like a tonal shift where it becomes more artistic and less like buffoonish. So I'm looking forward to seeing that obviously develop like it does. But I mean, there's been some good times. There's been some unexpected, almost like minor classics in season one. But obviously, it kicks on in season two. So we're on to the good times now, again.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I think watching these two episodes, I think that especially, I mean, I know we've been waiting to talk about Downer Ending for quite a while now, actually, but Downer Ending especially was a really, really strong episode. And obviously, like, I'm not really sure when it started, but, you know, penultimate episodes have started becoming more of a bigger deal than final episodes in seasons of television. I'm not really sure when that started, but everybody, you know, on HBO shows, everybody looks forward to episode 9. And in the case of BoJack Horseman, everybody looks forward to episode 11 because 12 wraps things up and then looks ahead. It kind of does the plot efficiency stuff, whereas like penultimate episodes are very big for story climaxes and emotional climaxes and big character moments. And so I think the trend kind of starts here, to be honest. I think Downer Ending doesn't really go for a big... penultimate episode feel, but I think what it achieves is just as high as quite a lot of other penultimate episodes in the show.
Yeah, I think it's its most I think it's its grandest artistic statement like so far, which again continues in episodes 11 throughout the remainder of the season. But I'm going to spoil things because I don't think it's the masterpiece that I initially thought it was, especially on first watch. It's what really like grabbed me into the show. It is extremely strong, but I'm not giving any high nines or tens out. Obviously, it didn't hit me like I thought it would and hoped it would. I mean, it is still a great episode, but I think I preferred later.
Okay.
On this watch, which is sure to win me plenty of fans, but I don't know. I mean, I know how good Downer Ending is, and. But just on this watch, it wasn't hitting me as hard. But maybe that's... maybe later's become more of a later bloomer for me.
Yeah, one that's better retrospectively.
Yeah, yeah. But...
maybe doesn't hit sort of instantly in the way that Downer Ending does. But going back to it, I think the tone of later better suits... later eras of, like later episodes of the show, especially the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah, and that's why I think I probably prefer it, because it moves into that later kind of atmosphere that I think like some of the best episodes of the whole show have. Whereas like Downer Ending's a kick into gear for that, but it's probably the third third best episode of the season. I can't remember my right. Scores though. So,
we'll get into Downer Ending properly then. So the episode, it begins, I'm right in saying, in Pinky's office,
yep.
The publishing place. And there's a moment in that particular scene that every time I watch it, I realise that I've forgotten just how horrible BoJack is to Diane when he says that, you know, she's kind of taken it out on BoJack because nobody, going as far as to say that nobody dated her in high school and she's insecure about it, and she's then put in a position where she has to be completely honest with him. And in a later season, I think she mentions that she used to watch Horsing Around when she was at home with her family, and then it's not revealed at this point yet that she used to watch Horsing Around, but she just, the way she says to him, "Ugh, you really let me down." I think it's
hints at it.
Yeah, I think this is the show beginning to reveal itself more and more. I think you have moments in episodes like Say Anything and The Telescope that maybe hint at where the show is going, but I think this is quite a direct hit now, where somebody's willing to turn to the main character of this show after 11 episodes and just say, "You are such a letdown. I can't believe I finally met you, and you are just such a letdown, and that's all you ever do." And at the beginning of the episode, Bojack's very much in a mood where he can hear something like that, where he can hear somebody say, "Oh, you're such a letdown," and then he can go, "Oh, I don't care. What I'm going to do is better than what you've done." And by the end of the episode, he's begging that person to tell him that he's good and that he's not too late for him. And I think to achieve that character development in 25 minutes, when more than 10 minutes is taken up of wordless animation and experimental kind of, I wouldn't say set pieces, but it's not exactly the regular formula for a BoJack episode, this, and yet to achieve so much character development in it, I think makes this episode kind of special. I don't think it's perfect, and I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I think it's my favourite of this season.
Yeah,
having watched it all now.
I mean, I forgot all about this Penguin Publishing scene. I thought we started where BoJack were probably, you know, drowning in some kind of like alcohol bottle can, alcohol bottles, and then Sarah Lynn were there. But no, I mean, he's horrible, and he has an arc in an entire episode. When he has this, when he has the Charlie Brown influenced the chat with Diane, which like don't really happen, obviously in well, in real life, but that is telling, because then the next time that they're together, he's asking for forgiveness almost. I think, well, not asking for forgiveness, but asking for Diane to validate him as a positive like person. But I mean, he's already had depth, but yeah, there's more depth obviously yet to come. But he's horrible to Diane, who idolised him potentially at this point. And the monologue at the end of the episode, I mean, that gets to me, but I'm not saying that he should be obviously forgiven, because he's like consistently horrible still.
Yeah, this is kind of the beginning of BoJack having a dozen major realizations, but then never really using them to form anything positive. If anything, it just makes him more destructive. And as much as the episode is defined by the experimental animation sequences, which I think, by the way, are a huge benefit of being an animated series as opposed to a live action one, where they can do things like the changes through time via little animation where BoJack kind of goes double vision, and then there's a whirring noise, and then all of a sudden 3 hours have passed. And there are things like that I'm not sure you could quite pull off in the same way with even just the little bits like that. I'm not even talking the bits where, you know, the use of colour and different animation and drawing styles and everything. Obviously you couldn't do that in live action, but even the little touches,
yeah,
I think you couldn't quite achieve in live action. But as much as the episode is defined by that, I think the key moments in it are in the gaps in between the kind of the humour, and, you know, it's when the dramatic writing makes a name for itself, because you get at the beginning where you have BoJack saying, where you have Diane saying to BoJack, sorry, that he's a letdown, as we've covered. Halfway through, there's a moment between Todd and BoJack where Todd says that at first he was hurt about BoJack spoiling his rock opera, but then he realised that's just how BoJack is, and that he should stop expecting BoJack to be a good person. And in the middle of all this chaos, where you have Death Grips music being used, firing guns everywhere, Sarah Lynn and Todd making quite a good double team, actually. Their character pairing is obviously something that we rarely see, but I think it's quite strong here, because as a foil to BoJack and as kind of like a wall for BoJack's words to kind of bounce off in this episode, I think quite a lot of the comedy they come up with is really strong. But even outside of that, it's the people in BoJack's immediate vicinity that keep saying things to him that you think, oh, wow, like, if you heard this, this must be quite crushing. Like, the bit where Sarah Lynn says to him that usually she just laughs until he shuts up.
Yeah.
Until he leaves her alone. And I think that's ultimately what turns the episode into what it becomes in the last 2 or 3 minutes, where BoJack turns up at that ghostwriters convention and begs Diane to tell him that it's not too late. Because in the middle of all this drug-fueled madness, there are moments of real, like, real clarity on an emotional and dramatic level in terms of not just the writing, but in terms of how BoJack sees himself. And yet, not once does BoJack ever really seem, even in later in the next episode, he never really seems like he's trying to make improvements. He just feels like they've said these words to him, but they don't really mean it. They'll come round, they'll do this, they'll do that. And then as soon as he gets the potential for some serious kind of self-awareness, his book comes out and everybody loves him.
Yeah.
And as much as the final episode is contemplative, there are still people telling him that he's a hero.
It must be
confusing for him to have to deal with these two perspectives, where the people closest to him tell him that he's let them down, but the people who don't know him tell him that he's a hero. Like, you get that kid at the end, like, oh my god, you're my hero, please sign my book. And obviously it gets a little bit further into kind of hero worship in later, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But what do you think of the sort of intense animation sequences, I guess?
I mean, it's a step up, obviously, because if you watch those early episodes, it's quite muddy muddy compared to this, and how it goes from, like, you know, art style that we usually see to then obviously jumping around. Obviously, I've mentioned the Charlie Brown homage as well. It's interesting, obviously, and it blew my mind the first time I saw it, because I thought, here we go now, this is going to kick on and be something, like, really special. And obviously it is, I mean, but they've never really done anything like this again, have they, where it goes a bit insane. There's a video I saw on YouTube where, like, they changed the art style. I think it was a Steamed Hams thing, and they changed the art style every 20 seconds or something. And yeah, it reminded me of that.
Like that Shrek movie that's just come out.
I've not even seen what? That sounds
basically a whole team of, like, 30-40 animators have redone Shrek in several different animation styles.
Nice one.
Yeah, so I guess this episode kind of does that too. Yeah.
Shrek is love and Shrek is life, so
absolutely.
I need to catch that.
The quality varies in the Shrek film, I'll say that much.
There's a scene before the madness ensues where it looks like they're delving into BoJack's parents, and then they don't, and they cut us off again. And they mention it a bit later on, but there's a scene where Diane were talking. Well, it's from the book where she's on about his childhood and his parents, and then he goes and changes it all up again and makes it seem like he had a perfect kind of childhood. But then they cut us off, and then he gets involved with vacuum cleaners, which I liked the visual gag of the vacuum cleaners. And then Sarah Lynn comes, and are you meant to like her as a person? Because I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to feel... given the way her character arc ends...
Yeah.
I think that you're supposed to feel perpetually sorry for her.
Yeah.
Even if you can't always enjoy her when she's there. But I think that Sarah Lynn being in this episode is actually really important, because BoJack, once again... This happened in the first 2 or 3 episodes, where BoJack's inability to write or do anything productive ultimately drags Sarah Lynn back into his orbit again. And it's basically a mirror of That's Too Much Man. It's a mirror of Prickly Muffin. Every time she shows up, it's because BoJack can't do something productive, can't make himself a better person, can't do something useful. So he calls upon an old friend who he can easily manipulate and say, hey, let's do drugs together. And
yeah, and the next time that happens, it doesn't end all too well.
Well, exactly.
So, yeah.
And Todd is a nice parallel to Sarah Lynn in this, because by the end of the episode, Todd has begun to really distance himself from BoJack.
Yeah, he's getting his wacky schemes, isn't he?
So manipulated, and whereas Sarah Lynn is just kind of devoid of any kind of ability to, she has no self control, and it's a long destructive path that has led her there. And BoJack will happily take her down it to the point where, obviously, she dies. But every time I see her come up now, especially in an episode like this, I just think, oh my god, here's another point on the map where things really could have been different. Things could have changed if she just didn't know BoJack. Maybe she could have been an architect. And
yeah,
it's yeah. Whenever she's there, I think she brings like a degree of real sadness, actually, because her presence isn't necessarily sad in the moment, but I think watching back, it's just, as I say, it's just another point in her life where BoJack phones her up and she could say no, but because she can't bring herself to do it, in the end, BoJack just exploits her for her access to drugs through Doctor Who.
And that features that great Abbott and Costello, is it? Who's on third? That it's a baseball thing, but yeah, I find it really funny when I can't do it justice, but
is this the third base thing?
Yeah, who's on third? Yeah. It's like what's on, I don't know, what's on first? What, I don't know, and then who's on third? Yeah,
this Doctor Who scene might be one of the one of two tiny down points in the episode, because I think it's like a trial run for BoJack's tongue twister stuff. It's like Courtney Portnoy, but not quite as woven into the story, or the, you know, they have to do, it's essentially a cutaway gag.
Yeah,
the character's
yeah.
still in the room, and it's not woven into the story or the dialogue in a natural organic way, in the way that the Courtney Portnoy or German bourbon stuff was earlier in the season. It feels like another trial run for that, and it's fine, but I think it takes up too much time. And it's the one scene, I think, in the episode where you're watching it and you think, there's better stuff coming, can we just get to that?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, I did like the deadpan delivery of the Doctor, though. That's probably the best bit of the...
Yeah, voiced by Kenji Yeong.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's got him in will do fine by me.
Yeah, I only recognised his voice, actually, because I've been rewatching for the millionth time Community.
I've just started, yeah, on 4OD. I've tried to get my sister into it, and I've just gone ahead and watched it all myself again.
Yeah, same to be honest. I was with my girlfriend for 6 or 7 days last week, and we watched the entire first season and two episodes of season two in about 5 days.
Yeah.
She really fell for it. Community was a really like important show for me when I was about 17 or 18, like really getting into basically just those good American shows that were on Netflix at the time.
Yeah,
that everybody was recommended to watch. Like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia was another one too, but if I hadn't been watching Community recently, I don't think I would have recognised Kenji Yong's voice. But knowing he's there, that's nice. He plays my least favourite character in the episode, but that's not really his fault.
No, but yeah, Community, again, I think we've mentioned it before, but it is recommended by me. Oh, so much. It's so good. It's so good.
Do you have anything more to say about this episode?
I think that Death Grips is the perfect soundtrack for murder. Yeah. I think. The Akira nod when Diane turns into that. Well, I think it's an Akira reference, kind of beast thing.
I eat too many pancakes.
And the fact that we see, when BoJack's running through his memories, he's there waiting to be picked up at football, which again features way later on. And that, I was like, oh shit, there it is, because that's I think that might have overtaken anything else as everybody's favourite. Is that the consensus best episode now? I think
I'd say so. Yeah. I think that and Time's Arrow.
The one bit I want to say about the episode, which I think is like the true greatest bit of the entire episode, and I think the entire series, is when Charlotte comes and all that begins. I mean, initially she turns up and there's like a heavenly choir, and then she walks off into the trees,
Yeah, she walks through the trees.
But I think he should have gone with her, because when he has all these questions for Charlie Brown and Diane, like, how do you keep your heart open and stuff, and then it cuts to the Charlotte and Burjack, like, romantic hallucination. I think it's by far the best part of season one, because you get to see Burjack at what is essentially the best version of himself, and how nice things could have been. But then he wakes up and it all comes to an end, and he's on front of Princess Carolyn with a list of everything he's apparently sent her, which includes, is it 6 pages of Doctor Who erotic fan fiction?
Yeah, and a load of other gibberish that she actually says is gibberish as well. Yeah. I also quite like, usually I don't like it when dramatic moments are kind of punctured by jokes unnecessarily.
I think it needed to happen, because it is a comedy, at least at this point, like, by and large. And if it had just ended with his, you know, his like no response to his heartbreaking monologue, and then it just ends, you know.
Yeah.
After he says things, you know, when is it too late for us? And you can hear Harper in the background, her laugh and stuff. In summary, I don't think it's as much a masterpiece as I remembered or expected, but the drug trip, obviously, is really good and kind of iconic. As I said, I think the true greatness is in the alternate life that, like, Bojack and Charlotte could have shared. But it is still a good episode, and, like, one of the best, obviously, of season one. I'd say a strong 8, just so anybody listening doesn't, like, kick off.
I'm going to give it just, like, a dead-on 9.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the best episode of the first season, one of the best episodes of the show. I don't think it's the best episode of the show, but I think that it does so much with a pretty unconventional format, even not just for BoJack, but for television in general. And I think it manages to achieve a hell of a lot on a character level, and I think it's funny, and I think it's engaging, and really quite unique, actually.
Yeah. It's definitely a watershed moment, I think. Yeah. Like, for the show, for Netflix, even.
You could be right. You really could be right there.
Is that the first 9 you've given?
I think it is, yeah.
I don't think
sadly it's the last one for the first season. Later does not quite match up to Downer Ending in my estimations, but it's not a low score.
No, I mean, I don't think there's any, well, low scores now are going to be hard to come by. I think I'll end up hating something that's a classic, you know, upon a rewatch. So
there's a few episodes later on that I think are worth maybe like 7s instead of 8s.
That's season 4.
Just in season 2 and season 3. Yeah, there's a couple. I won't give the names away, because obviously we'll talk about them as we go on.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of episodes. There's one in season 2 and one in season 3 and one in season 4 that I would maybe give like a low 7, high 6 to. But we'll get to those when we get to those.
Because I don't think we've been too harsh, have we?
No, I wouldn't say so.
I don't think we've been too...
No, I think we've been very fair.
Yeah, we've been ideal. I'd say ideal.
So, final episode of the first season, Later. And this opens with one of the show's best pre-credit sequences. And I think one of the show's best sequences anyway. I think it wraps itself up in 4 very short minutes and reveals a hell of a lot about what we've really been watching this whole time, and about where we're going to go, and about what it's going to do, and about what the show is really going to be about. I think it reveals itself A, in that letter, B, in Secretariat's response, and then C, in the bit right as it cuts to credits, where Secretariat jumps off the bridge, and then there's that radio transmission that says, "Oh, some idiot's parked his car on the bridge." And I think that everything in that letter, that how do you not be sad, the constant insecurity about whether his joke worked, I think you can see that BoJack was a really, really sad child who worked so hard to be a good person and then ultimately spiraled back into the sadness that he felt as a child because his parents' destructive influence can't quite... He can never quite escape from it.
Yeah, I mean, it is... Yeah, like you say, one of the best opening sequences that they've done, and certainly the best so far. Is it Will Arnett doing the voice there as well? No, it's not, but...
Of Secretariat?
Yeah.
I don't think so, no.
No, but that, again, indicates the tonal shift that we've just kind of gradually like been eased into almost in a really almost like morose and like melancholy way. We've been eased into this tonal shift and now, you know, there's no real coming out of it unless Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd are in the scene.
Which they are a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
I think the comedy is kind of contained to two little bits. There's the PB Living stuff.
Yeah.
And there's the they're not in New Cordovia yet, are they? Is it Syria that Diane is being phoned from?
Somewhere. Is Syria is it Sudan or somewhere? Yeah.
Yeah, I think the comedy's kind of contained in those two bits. I'm less convinced by the New Cordovia, Sudan stuff. I mean, it's fine, but when you're there, you want to be back in the real story, essentially. Whereas with the PB Living stuff, the Halloween in January thing is really strong. They weave it in to the main episode, obviously, because BoJack lands the role as secretary because Andrew Garfield injures himself in the Halloween in January store. And the way they keep doing the same gag and the way that it works is really effective. You have the Smoody scene that goes around in circles.
That's great. I love that one. Yeah, when they're in the diner.
Yeah, stuff like that must be really hard to write.
Yeah.
But it's... I mean, we've seen it before already this season with Todd and Mr. Peanut Butter, but they are a great pairing for each other. And I'm so glad that Todd is now free of BoJack's storyline, because I think Todd is... I think by the end of season 4, they maybe go a touch too far and they take him too far out of the story. But I think that when he's still just about connected to it, which he is for the first kind of 4 seasons, I think that that's when Todd's at his best, where he's involved with the main story, but he's the irreverent edge of that main story. And in an episode like this, I think it's necessary to keep the light in the dark and make sure that you have contrasting moods within each storyline.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it like a lot easier to digest, because obviously at this point in like an early watch, if you're watching it for the first time, you're still kind of, I presume, expecting a comedy, and there's laughs there still. So it's, I mean, only thing about like Mr. Peanut Butter, and he is my favourite character, but I think after the Golden Globes, where BoJack wins best musical or comedy with his book, which again, that's a better decision in the Golden Globes than there were like last week, but anyway, mm-hmm. Where like Peanut Butter's talking to BoJack and he's saying, "But how are you?" And then he walks off and does another Erica gag. I think that's a bit dickish, because like BoJack's got loads of issues, but, and then he tries to open up to him and then he just leaves.
Yeah, although it is kind of worth it for that "who let you out of, look at you out of the burn ward." I think that's the first of Erica's physical deformities coming to light.
Yeah, and I mean, he doesn't exactly cover himself in glory, does it, BoJack? Because he tries it on with that girl who like really admires his book and his life, and how tragic it is. by trying to sleep with her, and then he just hits it, and then he just hits it off with this,
with the other one,
with the other one, and just takes her back. And it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, I think this is kind of what I was tapping into before about Dana ending, where just at the point where Bojack thinks, just at the point where you think Bojack can become self-aware, like with this girl coming up to him and saying, "Oh, I thought your book was really inspiring and kind of really vulnerable and moving in a way I didn't expect to," and all he wants out of it is sex, and he turns to the girl who's willing to give him that and ignores someone who actually could genuinely make him feel special and appreciated. He is he's so self-destructive, and it's just, this is the first in a well, I would say the second or third maybe in a long run of episodes now where it eventually, it first culminates in Escape from LA, and then it goes to That's Too Much Man, and then it goes one step further every single time.
Yep.
And it's difficult watching these because, again, there are so many 50-50 forks in the road for Bojack, and he constantly takes the wrong option.
I mean, at least he gets the role away from Andrew Garfield. I can't even stand him in real life as well, for some reason. I mean,
no strong feelings about him either way.
What's he even doing now? He's around, isn't he, still? But what has he done? I'm just checking his filmography now because
yeah,
he just seems to have disappeared.
It wasn't he in Breathe last year?
Oh yeah,
Andy Serkis film.
And he's in that Under the Silver Lake, that David Robert Mitchell film.
And in terms of everything else, he's been on the stage, apparently.
Well, yeah, he can stay there. I don't know why I don't like him. He just looks a bit smug. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no strong feelings about him. Apparently he was good in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. But they had to recast it after his performance as Spider-Man, so...
Well, they do a reboot every 5 or 6 years, don't they? Because it was Tobey Maguire, then it was Andrew Garfield, now it's Tom Holland.
Emo Tobey Maguire, like walking down that street, that's all you need.
So, back to later. I think that there's quite a number of really revealing lines in this, because I think this is ultimately an episode about what it is to be happy. How can you be happy? And there are lots of moments where Princess Carolyn will say something to Bojack like, "Oh, if you can't be happy tonight, on the night that your book's being celebrated, you'll never be happy." And then there's Mr. Peanut Butter's comment to Diane where he says, "Oh, you know, life is just keeping yourself busy with unimportant nonsense until you're dead." and then there's the Diane line on the rooftop at the end of the episode where she says, you know, you either get what you want and then you don't know what you want, or you know what you want and you don't get it. And I think it taps into something I think we've mentioned on this podcast before, where quite a lot of Bojack's character and the destructive elements that it has are rooted in this need to finish projects and reach goals, and everything happens for him because whenever he works, if you think about it, at the end of, you know, in this season he thinks that he'll be happy once his book is out there. In season two he thinks he'll be happy if he goes to is it New Mexico where Charlotte lives?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he thinks he'll be happy in Maine or New Mexico. And then in season three he thinks that it's winning the Oscar, and then and even before that he thinks that it's landing Secretariat, and after that it's making a connection with Hollyhock, and then after that we think it might be going to rehab, and I have a feeling that when we come to season six he'll think that it's something else because rehab won't quite work either. And it's Diane saying, you know, you either get what you want and then you don't know what you want after that. I think that's Bojack's constant source of like confusion and depression. And when Diane brings it up in this episode, it really enhances. To be honest, there have been bits of this season, as much as I've not been, I haven't been disappointed with the first season because I think it's good, generally good, and definitely more than watchable. But there are moments in it that really drag up the quality because of how much it enhances later seasons now. And it shows you that they've either A, been thinking about later seasons from day one, or B, they've been going back to earlier episodes and seasons to make sure the continuity and to make sure that certain quotes mean more and to make sure that the continuity is exact. And that kind of effort makes it the show that it is now. And I hope that it can carry on to be... I hope it can carry on being this good, and I think it manages to stay as good as it has. A, with that effort, with paying attention to continuity and making sure that lines spoken in very early episodes that might have appeared either throwaway or inconsequential, or at least not as important as they eventually become at the time. But I think also they keep offering things up to BoJack as a way of... You know, life keeps offering things up to BoJack, and then BoJack either gets them or destroys them. And I think if they can keep that cycle going while it's also moving the plot forward around him, as to not make it seem repetitive, which they absolutely haven't so far, I think that they've managed to keep it really diverse and make it seem really fresh. I think as long as they can keep that going, we could be on for 6-7 seasons, I think, like maybe 2 or 3 more seasons.
Yeah, I don't want them to overdo it, but I don't see how they can either. So, but obviously, I don't want it to go into like 11-12 seasons. I don't think it will. But
no, I hope it doesn't.
I mean, I don't even think he'll be in rehab for any more than 3 episodes, like next, you know, in season 6.
No, I agree. I think that's how it's going to end up, and I think this episode, it really opens up this. I mean, I'm not sure it's the kind of show that will end on BoJack committing suicide, but I think that BoJack's audition as Secretariat, when he's speaking dialogue that's meant for Secretariat, the character, and applies to him, it applies to BoJack.
Yeah.
So nice. It draws a great parallel between them, and I'm worried that... Well, am I worried that BoJack might... I mean, obviously I don't want him to kill himself, but I feel like he doesn't necessarily deserve to redeem himself either.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends, because then he can play devil's advocate and be like, well, anybody could potentially have the chance to redeem himself. I don't agree with that myself, but when he reads them lines out, which is some fantastic like line delivery by Will Arnett, I think some of his best, but when he's talking about the pie in there, and then like the next, and the cut to the diner, and he's asking for the pie, almost like he's method acting, even though he hasn't got the role. There's parallels there, obviously, like you're saying, but he's already lived, is it what, like double the life that like Secretariat's lived? It must be nearly like 60.
It's 27.
Yeah, well, 27 club, innit? So.
Yeah.
And then he's what? They always say he's like late 50s now. He'll be getting older. So he's lived double the life of Secretariat. I don't know how they're going to end it.
No, I think how they end. If they carry on writing the show in the way that they do, I think the clues to the ending will be in this episode.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the clues will be all over the place, I suppose, but the clues, I think, will be in this episode. I think when the show finally ends, we can look back at later and go, this is probably where the inspiration for the ending came from. And I'm not talking about... I mean, the show has moved away from BoJack idolising Secretariat now. It's in a completely different universe to that. I don't think it'll end with BoJack jumping off a bridge. But I also think... But what I do think is that BoJack's constant, just this inability to just not let people down in the way that Secretariat probably ultimately let a lot of people down too.
Yeah.
Was it betting?
Yeah,
it
betting on cheating, races. Yeah, cheating on races. Betting on options.
Obviously, it might be tied to BoJack's own profession and the way that. It's just, BoJack is such a, I mean, obviously as a person, I don't like him, but as a character, he is just so, so brilliantly layered that we could talk about any. And I think a lot of this episode, this later, really, really feeds into that. I really think it does. I don't like it as much as Downer Ending, but it feels so, so nice for a show that at this stage you would believe it to be a comedy, and yet the season ends on such like a contemplative note at the observatory.
Yeah, I love that shot of the observatory where it just kind of zooms out after he's told he's a hero and he's just out looking there. But yeah. I mean,
and I adore the sound design of that scene as well, where they just play a field recording.
Yeah, I mean,
clearly they've gone to some park somewhere or something and just kind of captured some audio for 30 seconds. But
so Downer Ending, I think, is going to be more important for the TV show and for the, you know, for the importance of the show. That Downer Ending is going to be more important, but for the narrative, I think this is going to be so much more important as we carry on this episode and all the clues. That's why I think that they're both kind of equal. You know, they're completely opposite episodes. You've got one going insane and one playing it completely straight as a drama, for the most part, away from PB Living. But yeah,
it's not the best example, but it's funny really, because I've been recently I have come to the end of a big sixth time through Game of Thrones rewatch for this blog I'm putting together about which episode is best and worst and everything like that. And it's interesting that the end of the first season of BoJack takes a very similar approach to the end of Game of Thrones' first season, because at the end of episode 9, spoilers for Game of Thrones, everybody, but at the end of episode 9, obviously, you get the consequence of the political world in Game of Thrones, where Ned Stark, despite doing the right thing and being an honourable person, is ultimately defeated by this very dark political system in a city that he doesn't understand. And that's the political side of the show. At the end of episode 10, the final moment of the first season, dragons are born into the world for the first time, and the fantasy element and the magical elements of the show are what the season chooses to sign off on. And I think that's the moment where I think if you go to Game of Thrones now and start it up and you go, I thought this was a fantasy show, and then this first season ends like that, with Daenerys surviving the fire, coming out of it with three dragons, you're like, oh, it's a fantasy show. And I think these two episodes of BoJack Horseman, you have the penultimate episode going for the crazy animation styles, the irreverence, the characters bouncing off one another in funny situations, and you get the more experimental side of the show, which obviously comes further ahead. I mean, it comes to a head again at the beginning of season 3 with the underwater episode and Time's Arrow and even Free Churro. I would have Free Churro down as an experimental episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Because as much as the animation style is, you know, relatively uniform for the show, it's what it chooses to do and have it a 20-minute monologue that, you know, really kind of defines the episode. And then the end of this episode with Later, it's the more contemplative stuff, the more BoJack analysing what it is to be happy, trying to find answers from the people around him who he's either let down or can't provide him with answers. So he's directionless constantly, despite all these things that he's achieved on paper. He can't find happiness in any of it. And those are the two strands of the show. And I think that these last two episodes, as you were saying, they marry together so nicely, because you have one angle that is taken by Downer Ending and another angle taken by Later, and those are the two angles that the show keeps coming back to time and time again as it goes from like strength to strength and becomes this really amazing television show. And I think that when we come back to when we finish this season 5, when we finish season 5 in however many weeks it takes, I think that when we come back, we'll look at these two episodes and go, you know what? I think that this is where, I think, you know, obviously I still stand by Say Anything in the Telescope being the moment where it grows a little bit. and there's an episode in season two where it grows a little bit further, and so on and so on. But these two episodes are maybe not up to the, although they may be downer ending, I don't think they're up to the, like, the gold, the absolute gold standard that we expect of the show now. But in terms of the groundwork that they lay down for the gold standard, I think that's a different question. I think that's completely undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe give it, you know, like half a decade or whatever, a couple of years after the show's potentially finished, and then come back and rewatch later again, and I think it will be up there in that upper echelon of top episodes. I mean, even thinking about it now, as I'm talking about it, I'm finding more value in it than I did, you know, previously. Same. So it's just, I mean, a downer ending, I gave a strong 8. I'll probably give this a strong 8, but I really want to go 9. I don't know if I've dropped a 9 yet, but
go on then.
It's a 9. It's a 9 out of 10. There we go.
I'm going 8.5.
Yeah.
I think that what it means to later seasons isn't necessarily matched by the actual quality on show, but I think that what the little moments in this episode mean for later seasons is enough for me to boost its score, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, just to kind of round off, what are your brief thoughts on season one?
I think season one is a lot better than I remember it being. I remember thinking, let's start this podcast because I've just finished, you know, like one of the best late seasons of television I've seen in season 5. Oh, but season 1's going to be a slog to get through. But no, upon rewatching it, there's been obviously, like, you know, a few like average moments, but all in all, it's been a top quality season of television. Well, not top quality, but a good quality 12 episodes of American animation, whereas, like, and it only gets better from here, well, at least as I remember it, and I mean, it obviously does. Yeah. So it's going to get even better, isn't it? I might have to, like, tweak with my grading scale and become harsher, but because I think I've been a touch favourable on a few. I can't remember what I've rated from week to week. I'd be interested in seeing that. But because episodes like this and Downer Ending and the old Guilty Pleasure, like the Rock Opera episode, they're up there with other episodes that are more favourably received. But no, it's been interesting to see this world building that they've managed quicker than I remember, and like the fully formed characters are already there. I'm looking forward to seeing like more Mr. Peanut Butter as well. I know he comes into it a lot more because he's here 1 week and then he's not another, but he becomes more frequently in it. No, it's been a pleasant surprise this season one. What about yourself?
I think this is a season that, I don't know, it's so strange. I feel like it, when we first went into this podcast, I thought, right, season one starts really slowly, gets really good. But what actually happens is it starts really, really slowly, gets a little bit better, then gets worse again, then gets much better, then gets a little bit worse again, then gets even better than that.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's been making its way upwards, but has had, it feels like the first two episodes were eh, and then episodes 3 and 4 were pretty good. And then 5 and 6 were eh. And then 7 and 8 were, oh, much better. And then 9 and 10 were kind of like, eh. And then 11 and 12 have been great. So yeah, the line has always been gradually heading upwards, but there's always been a bit of a dip every other episode.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's been a bit truncated, but I think generally the quality is pretty solid. And I wouldn't worry about recommending the show to anybody. I would say, yeah, okay, you know, first couple of episodes aren't great, but persist to the end of the first season. It'll take 3.5 hours of your life-ish to do it all, or 4 hours or whatever, and it's worth it to get where you are at the end of the first season. And I think I could confidently recommend this to people and just say, start from the first season, persist through the first couple of episodes and you'll be fine.
Yeah, because I used to like and ah over season one. I was like, well, you know, yeah, if you can get past that, then yeah, it's great. But now I'm much more confident in like supporting season one, as it's a good, because it is a good, like, it is a good first season, because a lot of Netflix originals, I've not been like too impressed with them. I think it's,
no.
I mean, it is definitely up there as like one of the better debut seasons, you know, depending on your preferences of shows. I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to think of like better Netflix original first seasons than this. I think Orange is the New Black has a really strong and confident first season. It's not the best season of the show. I think season 4 and season 2 are much better than season 1, but I mean, it is a first season, but it only had 2. But Master of None's first season was excellent.
Yeah, I like that thing that's just come on today, and I've watched half of the first season. That's that Sex Education. It seems like some kind of Skins-esque thing.
Ooh. Actually, I think the first season of Stranger Things is quite solid.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new season, despite not being up on season 2.
Less so.
It's got Uma Thurman's daughter in it. So oh. I'll watch that.
Good for her.
Yeah, and for me.
The first season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was not as good as this, but it was pretty solid.
Yeah, and they're finishing that as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, to be honest, I watched the first season, and by the end of the first season, I thought that it was decent, but I was kind of losing touch with it a little bit.
Yeah.
And the point where she repeats Dong's name into her phone as a joke, because his name sounds funny, and I just kind of thought, eh. And then I started watching season 2, and I lost touch with it. My girlfriend carried on, and she finished season 4, but by the end of season 4, she was a bit less hot on it, to be honest.
Other things, I mean, that I either like or am aware are meant to be good. First season of House of Cards, but...
Crown as well.
Yeah, The Crown. Sense8.
Yes. So, you know, I think it ranks quite highly amongst all these, to be honest, this first season of BoJack. I do like it a fair bit. Not as much as later seasons, but that is only a good thing, because that's where we're heading.
Well, yeah, because I mean, later seasons of this are up there with anything.
Yeah. So, that's the end of season 1. We'll be back soon enough with the opening episodes of season 2 of BoJack Horseman, and I think we're well into sort of strong territory now, where I think you can pretty much guarantee that when you come on, there'll be there'll be positive things to say. So we have season 2 episode 1, which is Brand New Couch. BoJack hopes a positive attitude will change his life, but his new outlook doesn't work well with his new acting job. And season 2 episode 2 is Yesterdayland. BoJack is attracted to a woman who is probably the only one in town unaware of his fame. Todd opens a theme park, so Wanda comes into it.
Nice.
Excellent.
Lisa Kudrow.
Wonderful. Great episode. I remember that one really fondly. So, looking forward to this.
Season 2. We've made it.
We will see you all again. We have made it to season 2. So, for the entire first season, I've been a Rob Wilson type.
I've been a Samuel Cook type.
And we will see you very soon.